There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Oi, oi, it is 2019 and you can't hear me, which is good news. Welcome to the Grill, broadcasting live from where the game is always on. Thanks so much indeed for being part of it. A couple of gremlins in the system as we get things sorted for 2019. My name is Tom Urquhart, and what have we got for you over the next 3 hours? Plenty to look forward to. Sport aplenty as we dive into a brand new season of sport here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Saturday afternoons are all about the grill as we broadcast live from Barasti. We're up here at the rooftop garden. If you would like to be part of proceedings, then feel free to turn up the volume and join in the action. What have we got for you? Premier League action is back. We'll have all the latest for you on that one with an enticing early kickoff just a few moments away. There's goals aplenty, I'm sure, a little later on across some of the bigger leagues over in Europe. We'll have the latest from there. Plenty to talk about locally and nearer to home, just on our doorstep at the moment. We've got the AFC Asian Cup ongoing. We'll have all the latest from that. Plus, a number of big-name clubs and players training here in the region at the moment. There's international cricket for you. Rugby union stars, they've got plenty to look forward to with the European Cup are back in business over in the Northern Hemisphere, and tennis fans well catered for as well, with the first biggie of the season just 24 hours away. We'll have all the build-up for that one. Plus, we're looking back at some of the big sports stories of the last week, and of course, looking ahead to 2019. There's golf as well, and all the developing stories in the world of sport. As always, we're asking you and imploring you to join the conversation. A number of ways you can do that. You can get involved online. You can text us now on 4001. You can have your say online at Dubai I 1038 FM, at Dubai I Sport, equally hashtag Dubai I 1038 FM. But the best thing really to do on a day like this, when all is set fair, we've got sport on the big screen down here at Barasti. They've invested heavily over the Christmas and New Year period to make your stay down here even more enjoyable. So if sport's your thing, if sunning yourself is your thing, if socializing is your thing, then Saturday evenings are all about Barasti.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
4001, if you'd like to have your say, get yourself down to Barasti, or be part of the activities. We're up here on top, up the rooftop gardens, so do come and say hi if you are heading down. Who's with me to kick off a brand new season? A big thanks to all the team at Barasti for welcoming us back for 2019. It is The Grill. Version 7, 8, 9. Chris McCarty alongside me at the moment.
Nine, I think it is, Tom. You should know, you've been here since day one.
I think that we started in what, 2012, 2011, 2012 maybe?
I think it's 2011.
It was that far back, indeed.
It is, I think,
hashtag
year 9.
Fake it till you make it.
Essentially that, yes, long hashtag that, Tom, but of course you're just getting up to speed with all things Instagram. Maybe more on that as we go this afternoon. But year 8 or 9, we will consult with those that know. But it is nice to be back here at Barasti. Beautiful weather down here. And what a year we've got in store. What a 3 hours we've got in store, first and foremost. But it should be an incredible 2019.
Well, I was going to ask that. I mean, because we've had some big stories already. And what, we're 10, 11, 12 days into the year thus far. The 12th day is in progress as we speak. So I'm turning to you, Chris McCarty. You've got Matt Fortune alongside you because we've been ditched, apparently, by the one and only Mark Archer. Apparently, he got a better offer.
He did.
He got hooked.
But he'll be with us.
Has he been hooked?
He has been, but I got a message from him about an hour ago saying, don't you worry, I will be with you guys at about 4:30.
And a shocker this morning.
He is an eager beaver, is Mr. Archer. More on that as we go. But you're right, 2019, so much on the calendar. So
if I were to put you on the spot, and I know you both love your sport, and I know that you love sport in all its different forms, but if I could only give you one ticket, if you're only allowed one ticket for one event in 2019, and you weren't allowed to go to any other of it, you weren't allowed to go up to Sweden to watch some club football, you weren't allowed to go to some random sort of suburb of London to watch a bit of football or anything like that, if I could only give you one ticket, what would it be?
Fast forward to December of 2019, the Ali Pali, the World Darts Championship.
Okay, yeah.
No, I only jest with that. I think there is only one place. There's obviously the ICC Cricket World Cup, and I don't want to be disrespectful to any cricket followers out there. That is big on the horizon, But from me personally, send me over to Japan if you can. Okay. The back end of the year, it is the Rugby World Cup, and the World Cup final would be my choice. Because it's in Japan, I think they will do an unbelievable job in hosting the Rugby World Cup, and I'm kind of hopeful that Scotland may see out some fine days and may well end up in those final throws at the end. They're not going to win it, they're not going to get to the final, but that would be my choice, a ticket to the Rugby World Cup final later on this year.
Happy New Year, Matt Fortune.
Happy New Year to you, Tom.
What would make it happier for you?
What would make it, well, from a sporting perspective purely, I'm sure you're asking, Tom. For me, can I have one that hasn't officially been scheduled yet?
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout, you know, the events that we don't know about yet.
So, I'm a big boxing fan, and I've had the incredible pleasure this weekend of actually hanging out with Anthony Joshua, which has been quite fun. And that's
name
really
drop.
Yeah, that really didn't take me long, that, did it? Chris said in the car, how long are you going to last before you mention those 2 hours that you spent with him yesterday? Yeah, sorry about that. But I thought it's... And it's not to say to go to his fight in April, which we think will be against Dillian White. I'm looking forward to him sweeping aside his British competitor and welcoming another Brit into the ring. We think around October time, but the very idea of Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury going at it at Wembley is something that really, really excites me.
I'm not sure how much you can and can't say. Why is AJ here?
No, he's just been on holiday. He's before camp. I believe he'll probably go into camp around end of Jan, beginning of Feb, because he's got the fight, as we say, and I think it's April the 14th, as yet unnamed opponent. I think he was banking on something more significant happening between Wilder and Fury, and he maybe would have had to take things a little bit more seriously. But as it is, he's just been on holiday, having a good time. And we have a really great relationship with him down where I work, and yeah. He's such an amenable guy, and the people that come with him, it doesn't happen very often. In our line of work, we're very fortunate. We deal with a lot of sports stars. Some are incredibly difficult. Some not nearly as big as the world heavyweight champion. But AJ, his friends, they were apologising for being 2 minutes late. Like, it's a really small detail. In fact, at one point yesterday, I wasn't carrying any of my cameraman's bags, and AJ offered to take the bags. And then he told me that I should have done it in the first place, and I felt a bit scared. But it was, it's those kind of small details where you really think, just what a good guy. It's just awesome when you have that kind of experience.
Yeah, make the most of it now. Give it a couple of years. You'll be demanding gold-plated Rolls Royces to pick him up at the airport.
Absolutely.
You'll want rose petals thrown out as he makes his way into the lobby area. You want the lobby cleared. I want the lobby cleared. I don't want anyone to look at... Can you ask everyone to turn their back on me? When I check in, I want that bloke turning their back. I don't want a bloke doing it, that's for sure.
Yes. He doesn't want any blokes in the hotel as well, Mr. Joshua.
No, I mean, but it's an interesting one, isn't it? And because he's getting to that point. We were talking about this in the last week. Cristiano Ronaldo has been in town, and we were having the debate. In fact, Robbie Greenfield, myself and Sean O'Shea all went to watch that Man City Liverpool game straight after the Globe Soccer Awards. And we were talking about the fact that, you know, jesting that Ronnie will probably walk in any moment. He's a big football fan. You know, where else is he going to watch it other than the venue that we found ourselves in? And then that sort of prompted that question of, if he did, everyone in here would know who it was.
Yeah.
In fact, if he walked over to the Noodle House, everyone would know who he was. If he walked over to the Shisha Bar over there, everyone would know who he was. There's very few people in the world that everybody knows who they are, that sort of global persona.
Oh, yeah.
I reckon AJ's sort of getting to that at the moment.
I certainly think he's teetering on the edge, and I think... And you would have noticed probably around November time, there was a very clear push into the American market for AJ. That's the next big thing for him to conquer. He's huge in Russia. Obviously, his last opponent was Povetkin, who he beat quite comfortably, his seventh round. Incredible knockout. But that has, in some ways, elevated his position in Russia. He's huge in the UK, of course, but that big American fight is still some way away for him. And the reason being... Why would you go and do 18,000 fans in Las Vegas against an American when you can do 90,000 at Wembley Stadium in your home capital city? But that is the next big thing for him. I think you're right that for the most part he is recognised, but you do need, especially in heavyweight boxing, you need to crack that American market to really go into the top market. But for sure he's on his way. He's barely even 30. He's undefeated. He's, as I say, going back to the personality, the force of the brand AJ Boxing. It won't be too long before he's completely in that bracket.
So just to close bracket on this conversation, as you mentioned, I mean, Chris has booked his place already over in Japan. When do you need your ticket for, do you think? When do you reckon they will schedule this?
I suspect around end of October time. the idea that after April, and then he'll wait to see what happens between Wilder and Fury, which we'll think will probably be around May, June time. There'll be another big fight in Vegas, which will be the Canelo Golovkin. Again, it's all speculation. It's all just based on sort of intelligent thinking on what's happened before. But we think Canelo Alvarez against Golovkin, number three, of course, will be on the 5th of May in Las Vegas. So they won't want a big fight around then. So we think around June, that game gives them 5 months to hammer everything out and get it done for end of October in London.
Fellas, I need to get your thoughts on a couple of the big stories of the day. We're going to obviously build up to early kick-off in the Premier League, which is Chris McCarthy.
It is West Ham, your beloved Hammers, taking on Matt's beloved.
That's why we're not allowed to talk about it. That's why I have to go to the independent adjudicator.
I've got some very unbiased team news written down here, Tom. Don't you worry.
And it's not so much unbiased from me either, given that I am a Manchester United fan. I am, of course, hoping for a West Ham win as we look to try and close the gap to the top five. But yeah, that match underway in about 50 minutes' time.
Okay, before that, I just want to a couple of sort of observations. Sporting observations for me in the early part of 2019. Obviously, we're going to talk Andy Murray in just a little while on the eve of a biggie down in Australia. I want to talk Man City Burton first, though. First, a couple of questions on this one. First and foremost, you know, I like to think that I'm on top of my sport. You know, I like to think that I sort of know what's going on. Okay, I might not be able to pronounce everyone's name properly and things like that, but I like to think I've got a pretty good take on it. When that game flashed up the other day, I literally had to pinch myself and go, how on earth have Burton got to a semi-final of an All-League Cup in England?
Yeah, it's the way the draws work. They've done a great job, Tom. They beat Middlesbrough, didn't they, in the previous round to get to where they are. And yeah, they've done so on merit. So yes, they're a League One side. Yes, they're punching well above their weight, but... yeah, you weren't wrong to say that.
I literally had to take a second and go, hang on, whoa, this must be some other game or something. I thought, was it Man City seconds? Was it the under 21s? I couldn't work it out. And things have just got past me, and so take that on board. Then, let's move on to the result, Matt Fortune. I sat through and I watched the highlights, the painful highlights of this match afterwards.
Was there anything else apart from goals in the highlights?
Well, there were, and there was one that really struck me, which was when the eighth goal went in and the camera panned to the Man City bench and Pep Guardiola looking a little uneasy and every other member of the coaching staff behind, literally with their head in their hands, looking down, shaking their head, really not knowing where to look. That, to my mind, as an independent observer of the game, should not be happening. When it almost got to a point of showmanship, a mauling, a thrashing, yes, but an undermining of a rival and opponent. That surely the scheduling shouldn't allow that to happen.
Well, I don't agree with you that the scheduling shouldn't allow it to happen. It's the magic of cup football and players being and teams
not
being
a semi-final stage, though, surely.
But that's absolute credit to Burton. You don't want to give them a seeding when it gets to the serious end of things. I don't think they had any expectation of beating Manchester City, but for them, and actually there was issues with traffic arriving at the ground, but for the club of Burton and the fans of Burton to welcome Manchester City, and yes, you don't want it to be 9-0, and there is a debate as to whether or not Manchester City should have eased off, which I fundamentally don't agree with. Right. I think the magic of the cup is that these things happen, and sometimes they go the other way. I believe there was a chance quite early on, I think maybe at 2-0 and
1-0.
Was it 1-0? And Burton incredibly close. Would it have changed the result of the two-legged semi-final? No, absolutely not. But would it have been slightly less humiliating for Burton? Probably. But ultimately, will Burton remember the humiliation at Manchester City and will it have an impact on their season going forward, or will ultimately they remember the time they got all the way through to the League Cup semi-final, they welcomed the champions, one of the greatest teams we've seen in the last decade, to their stadium and then had a good day out at the City of Manchester? So I don't agree with you, Tom. I think the debate more interestingly is whether or not City themselves should have taken it upon themselves to maybe ease off
a little bit. You know, when you go four or five up or something like that, would you not therefore look to your fellow professionals? And I'm all for, you know, foot on neck and go for the jugular when you're playing against one of your Premier League rivals, or even playing against Premier League team, you know, those that are sort of that want to be the best. But those that, you know, are a couple of divisions below you, you don't therefore just
Well, there's two
fundamentally make fun of them.
Well, there's two schools of thought, because what would you have liked to have seen, Tom? The Manchester City defenders passing it 50, 60 yards from goal to all the all-A's around the Etihad Stadium. That then could be perceived to be taking the mick a little bit. At the end of the day, Burton, albeit are professional football players, they would have wanted Manchester City to respect them. Manchester City and Pep Guardiola certainly did that with the strength of the starting 11, the likes of Gabriel Jesus, Leroy Sané, Riyad Mahrez. That was your front three. Gundogan, Silva, and it was David Silva, that is, Gundogan, and Kevin De Bruyne, who of course is coming back to full fitness. That was the front six. So Pep Guardiola gave the ultimate accolade, if you will, to Nigel Clough's team to say, "Oi, we respect you." And then what's ended up happening is Manchester City, I watched the game from start to finish, they were a class act on the night. Some of the one and two touch football that were playing, Burton Albion couldn't live with it. But I'm kind of with Matt on this. At the end of the day, Burton are professional, and if you stood in front of every Burton player and said, would you have wanted City to ease off, they would say no, Tom.
Apart from the keeper.
Maybe the keeper. Maybe the keeper.
Well, I hate to bring up open up old wounds, Chris, but you and I have been involved in a game where
let's not go there. Where I conceded 10. I conceded one more.
I was managing and Chris was in goal and we shipped 10. And that outrageously talented Spanish team didn't let up on us at any point.
Absolutely not. We went down to 9 men. We lost our discipline at that match. And if it wasn't for me, it would have been 25. I think.
I suppose the one thing you could say, that you know, every cloud has a silver lining. So they're still in the tie, aren't they? Really, Burton, you know? There's always another leg, isn't there?
What I found interesting, Pep Guardiola, when you talk about a respect thing, but again, I guess he's just stating the bleeding obvious. After the match, he said, "Yeah, that's us done. We're into the final." And that was a comment that was like, oof, when have we ever heard a manager after a first leg, albeit it's not often after a first leg of a semi-final, you are 9-0 up. But afterwards he said, yep, that's us done. Yes, there's a second leg, but it gives him the opportunity to rotate his squad.
So that was my next question, and we'll just get to it before we quickly go to a break, which is that, you know, Manchester City have been under something of a cloud since their form in December has not been Manchester City-like. Yeah, OK, they bounced back with that victory against Liverpool, and there seemed to be that sort of... That verve was back, that vigour was back. There seemed to be a bit more swagger and things like that. I wonder whether this being the following game on from that was almost that sort of Pep Guardiola approach of saying, look, let's keep that momentum up, regardless of who they treat them as Liverpool.
That's exactly it. I think the turn of the new year, it's cliched to say, but you can probably throw, I would say, 99.9% of managers who come January the first day in at training, right, lads, brand new year, second half of the campaigns, let's set our stall out and let's go for it. And that victory over Liverpool, no doubt in my mind, has set up Manchester City for that. Pep's team talk would have been very easy ahead of that Burton game. Right, lads, we got that victory over Liverpool, we're back in this, now it's the business end of the season, let's go out there and perform the way that we know we can. And they did that. As I say, Kevin De Bruyne pulling the strings, Mahrez, Sané, even Jesus, they're fighting for places because of the form of Sterling, of the form of Aguero. You know, they want their positions in the team, and the 9-0 was a consequence of Manchester City being at their very best. Burton, we're humans at the end of the day, their shoulders, their heads dropped in the final 15-20 minutes, and Manchester City just didn't let up.
Your thoughts appreciated on this one. We'll talk more football, and in fact we'll talk Premier League early kickoff coming away just next.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You've got it locked into Dubai Eye 103.8. This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on. We broadcast every Saturday from Barasti. Well, someone has to. So feel free to come and join us. Come on down here, Rooftop Garden, absolute belter of an evening. The beach down here is heaving. A lot of people are giving up on that, heading up to the top deck and the middle deck to watch the early kickoff in the Premier League. I'm in the company of Chris McCarty, Matt Fortune. I can pretty much guarantee the wife's not listening. There is not a better place that I'd rather be in the world at the moment. 4001, if you'd like to join us and be part of it. New season kicks off right here on The Grill. Matt Fortune's got team news ahead of West Ham against Arsenal.
Indeed, Tom. So we'll start with your beloved Hammers. The big news is that Marko Arnautovic starts for West Ham, despite the midweek speculation that he would be on his way to China this window. Of course, the transfer window opened up about 10, 11 days ago. Talk of a £35 million
£100 bid for the Austrian international. And all the follow-up the following day, Tom, I'm sure you would have seen it, was that he was actually quite open to the idea. Behind him, Samir Nasri, he makes his first Premier League start for the Hammers against his former club, of course. Obviously, there was a stint in between at Manchester City, but he was signed just prior to the January transfer window opening, of course, banned from football in 2018. But he is he has world-class levels in his lock here, Samir Nasri. As an Arsenal fan, I remember him when he burst through, single-handedly defeating Manchester United. If Manuel Pellegrini can unlock some of that talent, that is an excellent free signing. So he starts. For the rest, it's very familiar for Manuel Pellegrini. Felipe Anderson had an explosive December. He'll look to continue that form. And at the back, you've got Zabaleta, Ogbonna, Diop and Cresswell. They're the defence tasked with shackling the Premier League's joint top scorer. For the Gunners, it's little of surprise for Unai Emery. He's flipped and flapped, I think. As an Arsenal fan, you're never really sure what team you're going to get. But you can say that his 3-4-3 has probably been his favourite. He reverts to that today. That means 14-goal Aubameyang and Alex Iwobi flank Alexandre Lacazette up top. Further back, there's no space in the team for Lucas Torreira, Matteo Guendouzi and Granit Xhaka anchor the midfield. And then there's the back three of Socrates, Laurent Koscielny and Shkodran Mustafi.
Not going to tempt fate on this one. Just looking forward to the game. It's 2019. It's a new season for the Grill. Looking forward to it. Was it one out of our last 21 meetings, I think, that we've come out on top in?
Yeah, well, for the famous chant, I believe, is last game at Highbury, first game at Emirates. I remember that first game at Emirates as well, the first defeat at Emirates Stadium for Arsenal. Arsenal absolutely battered West Ham. And then was it Bobby Zamora from about 45 yards looped it over the gut? Incredible. And then, of course, it was Zamora that had given Sol Campbell such a torrid time in that last game at Highbury. But, yeah, let's just say football should be the winner tonight, Tom, and hopefully Arsenal.
So, if football is the winner, let's talk about the transfer window, which obviously gives us all sorts of drama. Well, at least for the last 24 hours, possibly the last 2 hours of that transfer window. But in the lead up to that, so we've got another 18 days of torment mm-hmm. at West Ham to try and get through to see where the big Arnie will stay. The fact that he's walking out with a mascot at the moment to the London Stadium with all the talk that's been going on, all the headlines over the last few days, good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, good question. Good thing, probably. I think Manuel Pellegrini, an experienced manager, he's probably spoken to Marco over the course of the past 24 hours or so just to ascertain exactly where his head is at. But what he does remain is he remains a match winner. And when you're up against an Arsenal, and I often think the bigger the opponent, the better that Marko Arnautović is. He's one of those kind of characters, isn't he, that he wants to prove that he is capable of playing with the very best. And obviously, this is, you're up against, as Matt's rightly pointed out, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He is your leading or joint leading scorer, so you're up against some fine players. I think it will prove to be the right decision. I actually fancy West Ham to get a result this afternoon. I really do. I think Arsenal, sorry for saying that, Matt. That's good news for you, Tom, but I really do. And he's leading the line, is Arnautović, and it wouldn't surprise you if he turns out to be the match winner today again.
It's just an interesting story from West Ham point of view. It's sort of one of those ones where you wake up in the morning, you reach the phone, you check the feed, you put the phone down and you bury your head back under the pillow hoping it'll go away, because you sort of expect it. You know, we've taken on this mantle of being a bit of a selling club with players that help us into, you know, from sort of awful starts into mid-table mediocrity at the sort of turn of the season, and then we try and limp over the line for the remainder of the season. Arnautović has taken on the role of like your Tevez is and others in previous years who've been sold on, given an opportunity. A French lad we had for a while, went back over to France.
Dimitri Payet.
Was the most recent as well. There is no smoke without fire, and yet the smoke and the fire seems to be coming from Daniel Arnautović, brother and agent of Marco, who went, you know, live on Talk Sport midweek and talked about the fact that Marco wants to go to China. I mean, that's why I asked the question to Chris McCartney. I'll put it to you about, is this a good or a bad thing? Because there is obviously some sort of conversation going on. How much does Marco Arnautović know about it?
Well, I would suspect he's very well in the loop. It's his brother, of course, is his agent. You have to think, we were discussing before he came on air, that the China problem almost is that there is such extraordinary wealth there that it's so difficult, whatever level. And you look at some of the players that have moved over there. Oscar at Chelsea was at the peak of his career, was 25. And to be tempted by that, and you can understand it. We'd all be kidding ourselves if an offer came in of that sort of money to almost triple, quadruple your already extortionate wages. it would be very difficult not to at least pay it lip service. I think we all live in this situation where you want, and especially if it's at your club, you want them to really believe in the direction that your club is going in. And unfortunately, when you sign, as West Ham have got a habit of signing these sort of mercurial talents that have history, and there's no denying that Marko Anatovic is a fabulously talented player, that he ultimately hasn't lived up to his expectations. You look back at his time at Werder Bremen and the stories of the way he behaved as a Champions League winner, when I believe he didn't even have a single minute of the previous Champions League winning campaign. And this is a guy who's now finally starting to show that, but it is always going to be a problem. And to answer your question, is it a good thing? That sort of money at this level, unfortunately, you're not going to find a player that you can replace with Arnautovic, and that's where the difficulty is.
I think the other thing to bear in mind with this as well is that not every player dreams. For example, Marko Arnautovic, did he dream as a young boy of playing for West Ham? Let's be frank, he did not. The other thing to remind ourselves as well is not every professional footballer wants to get to the very top of his profession, like any other industry or business. For some, they play football to earn the exorbitant money that they do. And in the case of Marko Arnautovic, he's had his head turned by, as Matt rightly points out, an offer of stupid money, is the best way to describe it, over in China, where he is, and I would suspect he's probably already on £80,000 to £100,000 a week. He will be easily doubling that, if not tripling that, with a move over to China. For some, Tom, that is important. For some, they don't care about trophies. I hate to say it, but I think we get caught up as fans thinking every single footballer wants to be the very best that they can be. That's just not the case.
So don't play intelligent listeners and intelligent observers of the game lip service, as Daniel Arnautovic has been going, saying, trying to justify it. If they just came out and said, look, it's all about the money, there's not much we can do it. But him going on and saying, Marco's in the prime of his career, he's keen to be with a team that is challenging for trophies at the moment.
That's nonsense. Why.
Don't say that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. That I was almost thinking, actually, is it quite good that our players are being a little bit more honest? It doesn't happen very often, but you're right, justifying such a silly move just doesn't make any sense. Be completely honest and say, yeah, it is about the money. My counter argument might be that, is this a way of leveraging further interest from other clubs that might be interested in Marko Arnautovic, where we would deem it to be a more appropriate transfer to somewhere sort of the upper echelons of Serie A, perhaps, maybe to a definitive top five, top six club. He could do a job there. By suggesting that Arnautovic could be wrangled out of his contract at West Ham, that maybe be the motive behind it.
Because there is, if the gossip, the transfer gossip, is to be believed, a little bit of interest possibly from Manchester United,
there was,
possibly Chelsea.
Absolutely. From a Manchester United perspective, there definitely was an interest there, but that came and went with the former manager at Old Trafford, Jose Mourinho. There's no way in heck that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would be interested in Marko Arnautovic. Not my understanding on that front. From a Chelsea perspective, yes, I could see it. I know they're talking to Gonzalo Higuain. Some suggesting that Alvaro Morata may be moved on. Atletico Madrid being touted. Sevilla being discussed as well with regards to an interest to him. So, yes, potentially Chelsea. But then again, if it's the Chinese clubs that are offering, what, 36, 37 million for Marko Arnautovic, on top of that, £200,000, £300,000 a week on salary on top of that, there ain't many clubs in the Premier League that would be willing to match both the fee and the transfer fee and the wages for Marko Arnautovic.
Marko Arnautovic is on, how much did you reckon he was on?
£80,000 to £100,000 a week.
£100,000 sterling a week at the moment. But he's not the highest paid player at West Ham.
Felipe Anderson
is not the highest paid player at West Ham.
Javier Hernandez
is the highest player, man. Oh. By some way as well, £140,000
a week. £140,000 a week, wow.
Was he a free? He wasn't a free transfer. That can't be as part of the fact that they got him on a good deal, was it? No, he was about £20 million, wasn't
he? Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah. That is staggering.
£140,000 a
week. Third on the list is Andy Carroll. He was rubbing his hands still. He's still on £90,000 a week for sitting on a bench.
I would
mostly
say, to Chris's point about not many clubs being able to afford that, I'm pretty sure that Chelsea, if they can offload Alvaro Morata for probably in the region of about £40 million, and that is a staggering loss on what they did on him, Arnautovic, that sort of movement, and I'm by no means a Chelsea fan, but that sort of movement with the intelligence of Hazard playing in around it, I think would be a really wonderful fit. And ultimately, Hazard, it looks like, is Sarri's preferred option through the middle. So Arnautovic isn't going there to play the whole time. So therefore, you would, in this day and age, you pay 35, 40 million quid for a sort of second-choice striker. I think it would be a really good fit.
Still got Giroud, remember?
Well, and I have my very, very soft spot for Olivier Giroud, even though I do see him in Chelsea blue, but it's quite clear that Sarri doesn't fancy him.
Pellegrini's done the right thing, to my mind, as a West Ham fan, and as from a, you know, this is a West Ham fan talking about Marco Arnautovic, and he's become a bit of a cult hero. West Ham always need a cult hero as part of their team. We've seen it from the days of Paolo Di Canio and well before that as well. There's always been a player that the fans have got behind and sort of invested in. Marco is certainly that role at the moment. And, you know, I don't know him personally, but from what I read about him, he needs to be part of the equation. And the fact that Pellegrini has invested all of that responsibility and put it there up front, go on there, Marco, go and put prove your critics wrong on a day like this, that could be only good.
Yeah, absolutely. And Marco Arnautovic himself has come out to say he had a great relationship with David Moyes. You may recall that David Moyes was actually the man that moved him central. He was a figure, certainly in his Stoke days and in his early days at West Ham, played wide on the left-hand side. David Moyes saw something in him to play him through the middle, and Pellegrini has carried on with that. And he seems to rise to managers who are more akin to putting the arm around the shoulder as opposed to the hairdryer treatment. So I think Manuel Pellegrini today is just looking for a little bit of reward, something back from Arnautovic. He's given him his start. He said, go out there, prove to these West Ham fans that you're a class act. Prove to these West Ham fans that you do want to still be at this football club. And he's given him the start. And for Manuel Pellegrini anyway, he will be hoping that he's repaid in kind. And who knows, we're still in the early stages of this one, but it could well be a winning goal or something to at least take something out of this match for West Ham come the end of the 90 minutes.
Keep your thoughts coming in to us, 4001, if you'd like to have your say. Again, one final one from me, if that's all right, on this whole thing of money. And again, I suppose it's when, you know, you're threatened with losing one of your star players, a bloke that's done a lot for your season. You sort of see it through rose-tinted glasses. But I just want to get back to the money thing, if I can. Because, yeah, the money's out there. We've seen it in the past, you know, be it other leagues that are offering bigger sums. China is obviously the cash cow at the moment for players in the pomp of their career. What it gets for them personally and professionally remains to be seen. But is there ever a point, and both of you love your football, possibly a lot more than I love my football, but as a football fan, is there not a little bit of you that just turns around and go, fellas, just have a look at what you've got. Have a look at what you've got and ask yourself, do you need more? Or does it just come down to that greed thing?
I've asked that to myself an awful lot, Tom, over the years. It does come down to that, but it's each to their own, and that's what I always come back to. I've had many an argument with both individuals out of the game, in the game at present, about the sums and where it all ends. You know, does it all end when the house of cards fall down from a TV rights perspective? I know the advent and certainly the introduction in the coming years of Facebook, Amazon, YouTube in on the broadcast rights deals, that might be an area where we start to have to look inwards a little bit and to stop the madness, because we're now talking about some footballers earning 300, 400, yeah, half a million pounds a week. So doing the quick math, what's that, 2.5 million dirham a week? It's monstrous sums of cash. But then, whilst the interest is out there, we're all tuning in. If I look down to the Barasti deck, there are thousands, not thousands, that's probably a massive hyperbole shout there. There are a few hundred packed into Barasti this afternoon to watch the football, and that will be the case not only around Dubai, around the Emirates, but across the world as well. The Premier League sells, football sells, and whilst that is still the case, and whilst there are TV executives willing to spend billions on the TV rights, then those exorbitant sums, they're here to stay.
Highest paid player at Arsenal at the moment
is Mesut Ozil.
On?
£300,000 to £350,000 a week.
£350,000 a week.
It's mental.
So, my argument, taking on...
He's not a high-intensity player. He can't deal with high-intensity.
on an individualistic basis, and taking football in as in any other industry, it's a case of what your peers are doing and what you're putting in to get out of that. So, yes, the sums are exorbitant, and yes, I'm sure all three of us would love 500,000 dirhams a week. It would be wonderful. I'm not sure I'd know how to spend it, but it would be great.
I'd give it a shot. I'll tell you what, I'd give it a nudge.
I know
it,
knowing me, I'd probably bank 490,000 of that each and every month.
But my argument would be, if we looked around and there was a rival broadcast going on and they were earning quadruple what we were, but doing one-tenth the listenership, that is where your frustrations would come from. So it's not about, yes, I earn this much more than somebody else doing something completely different. It's a case of, hang on a second, I'm working so hard in training, I'm the best player on this team, I'm scoring all the goals, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but we're not getting anywhere. And I glance over there and there's somebody else doing less than me, but being remunerated far more severely than I am, that is where the frustration comes from. And I do agree that the sums are ludicrous, but from a peer-to-peer basis, you can't argue with someone wanting to at least justify their own means.
I get that. In terms of the game and the health of the game, though, is a salary cap, is it something that you think we will see?
I don't think it's something we'll see. I do think it is a smart idea, but I do think it's very much locking the door after that horse has bolted. Yeah. Because there's no way. I mean, where do you introduce it? Because if you try and, I mean, even in slightly similar terms, when France introduced massive tax on significant wages, the outgoing of players in there was immediate, because all of a sudden they had a cap of sorts. I just think it's too late. I do think it would happen. I think it would be great it would happen, that it would level the competition out a little bit more. But yeah, that train has sailed, as they say in Austin Powers.
Let us now turn our attention to the two managers that have gone head-to-head in the early kickoff in the Premier League. Unai Emery taking on Manuel Pellegrini. Let's start with the Arsenal man. Unai Emery enjoys playing against Manuel.
We know together very well. He knows me, I know him. But I think in the difficult game for us, is the most important is the squad, the first 11, the first 11 be very, very concentrated for this match. And then tactically, I think not a lot of surprise from then to then also for us. And the most important is the quality of the player on the pitch can impose our idea against them.
For his part, Pellegrini has replied in kind and says that Unai's doing his job well.
I say to him every day is with us when we need his performance for.
Well, it's not easy to replace Hansen Becker after so many years that he was in Arsenal. It's difficult to make now a balance about the season. We know the demands that always had Arsen Wenger with Arsenal. He normally was fighting or playing. He played always Champions League except 1 year or the last 2 years. So the demand of Arsenal are high, and I think that for the moment, Unai Emery is working very well.
And what about the two players that are very much in the headlines at the moment from their respective clubs? Let's start with Pellegrini, who was obviously didn't really want to go into too much details about Marko Arnautović. However, he has spoken about it.
I don't want to talk about things that can happen, because after that it doesn't happen and we lose the time. So I think Marko is in this moment is player of our team. I repeat, the players of his quality or another rumor, Declan Rice or Felipe Anderson, will always, other club will want them. But that's one thing, and the other is to really that they must go. I don't think that they will go.
You definitely want to keep him?
Yes, of course, want to keep it, but you never know what can happen in the future.
So he definitely wants to keep him. Is that the same case with Unai Emery? Would he like to keep Ramsey? What about Ramsey and all the circulation about his contracts, but also his interest from other clubs?
I cannot say more than this situation. For me, the most important is Aaron Ramsey with us. And then his future, I respect a lot, because he's one decision. Very, very privacy decision, but between his with us every day, I repeat the same. I am very happy with him now.
Aaron Ramsey linked with Real Madrid, linked with Juventus, linked with all the big clubs in Europe at the moment. Where's he? I was having a lovely one with my boy Gus in the car earlier on today, trying to make light of a painful trip to the dentist a little earlier on, and we were talking about potential move to Europe for Ramsey, which is looking all the more likely at the moment, and him going to Real Madrid, particularly, to Juventus. And Gus would go, yeah, that'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? It'd be brilliant, because it would be like Ronaldo, wouldn't it? Or Ronzi. Yes. It's Ronzi, you know, taking over, doing it for Juventus.
It would, and I think that's exactly where he will end up, Tom, reading between the lines, and I'm sure we will see that then. Ronzi will be trending next season, because it does, for all intents and purposes, look as if Aaron Ramsey will head to Juventus in a Bosman move in the summer. I think it's a good move for him. What is he now, late 20s? We know Juventus historically have done really well with players reaching the latter part of their career. Now, and I appreciate Aaron Ramsey has got an awful lot more years left in him. He has had his injury problems though. Juventus, for whatever reason, Patrice Evra talked about it at length in a recent interview, they just have a way of managing older players. It in part explains why Cristiano Ronaldo, I feel, chose that part of the world to continue his career. I think it is a very good move for Aaron Ramsey. Arsenal, let us not forget, are the ones here who withdrew a contract offer for him for what has been described as financial reasons. So for Aaron Ramsey, you've got to applaud him. Another British player taking the opportunity to move abroad can only be a good thing, certainly for Wales, following in the footsteps of John Charles as well, the most famous of all Welsh footballers, who of course trod that path all those years back from Wales over to Italy with Juventus. So wishing him well, fine player. But as Matt will probably tell us in just a moment, Lucas Torreira's come through. Granit Xhaka's having a much better season than he did last season. And Unai Emery is taking Arsenal in a different direction that doesn't include Aaron Ramsey.
Is that the case, Matt? Just no place for Aaron?
Well, it's strange because that high-intensity pressing that has done that Unai Emery wants his team to do that has left Mesut Ozil on the fringes is exactly the sort of thing that Aaron Ramsey would probably quite good at. Playing in that number 10 role, maybe a little bit withdrawn from the number 10, but his energy is what stands Ramsey out. His most prolific season for Arsenal came about 13-14, where he was absolutely brilliant getting beyond the lone striker, Olivier Giroud. I remember in the Champions League, I think he scored 4 games in a row, what, a winner at Dortmund, a winner at AC Milan, by getting beyond, but then also getting back. He's very much that box-to-box midfielder that we don't really get so much anymore. So I do find it incredibly strange that there isn't a space for him. I think Chris is right. Lucas Torreira's come in and done brilliantly well. Granit Xhaka is much more improved with a scurrying, harrying central midfielder alongside him. My only feeling could be, and listening to a lot of the media talk about who Arsenal are being linked with, the likes of Eva Banega, Adrian Rabiot before he was linked, before he confirmed his move to Barcelona at the end of the season. All of these players play in that position. So maybe it was just a case, those negotiations started pre-Unai Emery. Maybe it was a case that Emery just thought, I actually need in my engine room, I need a player that I can trust to do exactly what I want them to do. And maybe Ramsey is a little bit too gung-ho sometimes. Maybe runs a little bit too much. Maybe gets caught a little bit too far upfield sometimes. And maybe that was the case. He's certainly going to Juve. There will be increased money for him there. There'll be a hefty signing on fee, I'm sure. But he certainly leaves Arsenal with absolutely zero ill will from anyone. Famously turned down the chance to join Manchester United. Arsenal and Manchester United both have bids, I believe, of £5 million for him. He was a 17, 18-year-old kid at Cardiff City. Both players had the story that is bandied around Arsenal is that Sir Alex Ferguson, and this is pure speculation that's spread around, is that Sir Alex Ferguson sent Gary Neville to give Ramsey a tour of the training ground, whereas Arsene Wenger flew Aaron Ramsey and his family out to Switzerland to talk personally to the player. And that was the thing that did it, which I think, I'm sure there's some part to that story are true. But of course, Chris touched on it. Injury record's not great. There was obviously called the terrible, terrible leg break injury that really held him back. And you can think that maybe some of those muscular injuries are a result of the leg break and the imbalance that would have been caused by that. But how many players score 2 winning goals in FA Cup finals? And I think for that, and for the fact that he hasn't said anything throughout this process, there hasn't been any, they withdrew the money, anything like this. He's quietly got on with his job. I think when he's come on, he's scored pretty much every time he's done it, against Fulham last week, a couple of weeks ago, against Huddersfield, I believe it was. He's a good egg, Aaron Ramsey. Childhood sweetheart, married. He's all the things that you want from a player, ultimately, that could have been captain of Arsenal, but will go elsewhere.
Yeah, and he cries himself to sleep every night in turning down Manchester United for Arsenal as well.
We're going to take a short break. We're going to move away from the opening kickoff in the Premier League this afternoon, where it is Arsenal who are the guests down at the London Stadium, where they're playing West Ham at the moment. No goals as of yet. We'll let you know as and when any goals fly in there. Just before the show, Chris McCarty and myself were bandying texts between one and other, comments about what we're going to chat about over the next few hours. Chris said he'd like to do a segment on Aussie Sport. I said, yeah, bring it on, baby. Bring it on. Let's do Aussie Sport. What do you want to do? Their opening game in the AFC. Do you want to talk about that one in the Asian Cup? Let's do India against Australia in the cricket. Or should we do Australian prospects in the Aussie Open? Are those the ones you want to do, Chris McCarty?
We will do them all and much more as we go over the course of the next half hour or so. Matt Byrne will be joining us. There will also be a little mention of the AFL Middle East as well. But of course,
they always win that. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, they are the experts at that particular sport. But yeah, the main focus will be the AFC Asian Cup. We're a week into the tournament taking place right here in the United Arab Emirates. Defeat for the Aussies in their opening game. They bounced back yesterday. A 3-0 win over Palestine. We'll look back on all of that and some of the big talking points from the week that has been the 2019 AFC Asian Cup.
Come and join us.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
Talking of sports watchers, let's just bring you some live scores. Let's go to the Premier League first. Matt Fortune's watching this one for us.
Yeah, 0-0 still, Tom. We're 22 minutes into the game. Your beloved Hammers actually started pretty well. Antonio really unlocking the Arsenal defence. The back three with the fullbacks pushed up has actually not done Unai Emery any favours. West Ham enjoying a lot of joy far left. Your man Marko Arnautovic, who we spoke about a lot at the beginning, not really involved. Sami Nasri at the heart of everything at the moment, joining Arnautovic further forward. Some neat 1-2s with Mark Noble early on, the Englishman scuffing a shot from quite a good position as it goes. But the more of this game has progressed, Arsenal have finally got a foothold. Matteo Guendouzi is leaving his anchor midfield role a little bit, getting forward. Him and Alex Iwobi connecting really nicely, actually, in and around the box in the middle. So Iwobi, it looks like, is, we said at the beginning, was going to be a three up top. Iwobi, it looks like, is tucking in behind Lacazette and Aubameyang. And with his direct running, his good feet, his good range of passing, Arsenal are starting to get a little bit of joy. The biggest chance of the game has fallen to Lacazette. In fact, twice. He's got in once on the right and another time just now. But Declan Rice has been there to sniff it out. It's a good game so far.
Watching that on the big screen down here at Barasti. Also, if you would like to watch Asian Cup football, it's being shown down here at Barasti throughout the entirety of the tournament. We're going to talk more about this tournament in detail in just a few moments' time. But bring us bang up to date with the live game on at present, Chris McCarty.
Yeah, just a full time, just a few moments ago from Group D. Vietnam taking on the Carlos Queiroz side of Iran. And I can tell you, finished Vietnam 0, Iran 2. Sardar Azmoun, very much the talisman for an Iranian's perspective, plays his club football over in Russia. I know a number of Premier League clubs have kept a close eye on the young striker. It is he who is the hero. A couple from him, Iran, 2-0 winners. Serene progress made in this group. And one thing you can always guarantee with a Carlos Queiroz side, they will not concede many. They had a wonderful World Cup qualifying record. They continue that in to the World Cup. And they are among the favourites. Make no question, make no mistake about that. They are one of the favourites for this tournament. It has finished Vietnam 0, Iran 2. Two games to look forward to. One kicking off in about 35 minutes' time, also from Group D. It's Yemen taking on Iraq. And then a little later this evening, I am assured it will be a sellout. Group E, it is Lebanon taking on Saudi Arabia.
I just want to bring it today with cricket before we get back to the football. South Africa taking on Pakistan at the moment. That one's still live at present. South Africa 262 from their first innings, then skittled Pakistan for 185 in response. South Africa are 25 for the loss of one wicket. That one's still in play. A little earlier on today, there was me barracking the Aussies a little earlier on, but they're on the board. Australia winning their first match of the three-match one-day series against India in Sydney earlier on today by 34 runs, despite a century from Rohit Sharma a little earlier on. So well done to the Aussies there. And they bounced back yesterday in the football, didn't they?
They did indeed, yes. They needed to an opening defeat to Jordan, as it was 1-0. There was an awful lot of Aussies that packed out the Rashid Stadium yesterday, looking, hoping that their side could get a result, now managed by Graham Arnold. Rennie Mullenstein as well, the former Manchester United first team coach. He's part of the coaching staff as well, so I'm sure one or two Manchester United fans would have had an eye on that. One man who certainly did, he is leading the way. He's a bit like the Pied Piper, so he is over in these parts. Delighted to say that joining us live down here at Barasti, it is our good friend, proud Aussie as well. He was there yesterday. It is Matt Byrne. A very good afternoon to you, Matt.
Thanks for having me, lad.
Always lovely to be joined by you. So much to discuss in the world of Aussie sport. We'll get to your beloved AFL Middle East as we go, but it was victory for your boys yesterday, bouncing back after that opening defeat, 3-0 against Palestine. Good win?
It was, and as you said, much needed after a terrible start to the tournament. Coming with a bit of confidence, knowing that we're up there with the top nations in the Asian Cup. But Jordan, they actually did play some good football. We had most of the possession. The pass stats were all very, very high, but they just made most of their one opportunity. They had a few others, actually, and we didn't really produce much. It was a bit of a shaky start, but yeah, yesterday's was a much better result. An expected result against Palestine, and it was a great crowd down there, down in Dubai, at Rashid Stadium. There's just under 12,000 in the stadium, which is, you know, great for football in this country, and also just, you know, also great for the Aussies here, seeing the Socceroos in their own backyard.
Yeah, let us not forget, Matt, you guys are actually the defending champions. You won it on home soil back in 2015. Are the Aussies turning out en masse
to cheer on the Socceroos over here?
Yeah, they are. They are, especially yesterday being at a Friday. That helped a lot. The first game was in our lane with the 3 o'clock kickoff, and it was first day back for school, which probably made it difficult for a few people. Next game will be Tuesday in our lane as well. But yeah, there's definitely a few Aussies that have come over for it. We always love the nation's teams, and there'll be plenty more out there in LA on Tuesday as well.
Yeah, Graham Arnold back in charge for a second time, I think, as Aussie boss. What are the expectations, certainly amongst fans here, but probably more so from the media back home? Are Australia the favourites? Are they seen as being favourites to retain their title?
I think probably if you asked that question a few months ago, they would have been right up there. They're definitely obviously in that top five with those other big countries like South Korea, Japan, and actually Iran, who I believe personally is now the favourite, the way they're playing their football at the moment. But yeah, again, we had some injuries which haven't helped. We lost Daniel Arzani, only 20 years old, sort of the future, everyone's calling him, and he unfortunately he's on loan to Celtic and had the ACL injury. Also Aaron Moy with a knee injury as well, so he's out of the whole tournament. They named him in the squad, gave us a bit of hope, but unfortunately he hasn't come through. And then also Martin Boyle, who's the adopted Scot, but representing Australia, and was actually in very good form, and he did that injury in Oman in the friendly just a few days before the actual tournament started, or probably 5 days. So those three injuries really hit us hard. Once they come through, I don't think I wasn't as confident after the first game. Didn't feel great either. But again, Jordan beat Syria 2-0, so they're actually playing some good football. We get the result on Tuesday, and we finish second, and then we'll go from there. I think we're still in second gear, to be honest.
Still in second gear. Of course, that is not a bad habit to get into. In second gear, winning matches. Okay, you didn't win your opener, but you've bounced back. 3-0 win over Palestine, as we said yesterday. You can almost warm up towards the tournament. You can almost find form as you go in a knockout tournament. One thing that I have noticed, Matt, and forgive me if I'm wrong on this, a lot of my Aussie mates have been posting the Australian boys coming over at the end of the match to mix and have a chat with some of the fans. That's lovely to see. Was that indicative of what you saw yesterday?
Yeah, they did. They did the same thing in LA as well for the first game, which is great. I saw a few shirts go out to some kids as well.
Brilliant.
So I guess they're making that a pact to, you know, thank the fans if they have travelled, or even the local ones that live here, the Aussie expats. So, yeah, that's a nice personal touch, and that really gets the fans back on board with the team if they're not playing as well. But yesterday we got the win, which is good.
And I've seen that you have been to a number of games. You're enjoying it, and it is worth pointing out to a lot of our listeners, Asian Cup is here until February the 1st. 24 nations, the expanded, first time that it's expanded to that size, 24 nations here all the way through. You've enjoyed it thus far. I know we're only a week in, but there's been some belting matches as well.
Yeah, it's been great. As a football lover, I mean, to have this tournament as big as it is in this country, 51 games, you have to remember, that's what's been played over this month. So that's a lot of football, and a lot of stadiums that I, you know, living here for 6 years, haven't even been to. But going to those stadiums, you know, it's just great to see them. You've got Hazard Bin Zayed in LA, it's a fantastic stadium. But then even Rashid yesterday, it's a proper old school stadium, but for 12,000 people, it's great. So, yeah, all the expats who live in here, where there is a lot from all those 24 countries, make sure you go out and watch the games, because it's a great atmosphere, and support your team.
Football is talk of the town at the moment. We'll remain talk of the grill. We're live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Games on the big screen, we're talking football. We will, of course, talk golf, cricket, tennis, and much, much more a little later on in proceedings. Just keep it locked here on Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.